and welcome to our final regular season episode of the Three Bid League podcast. The last one with both of us here together in Dayton, Ohio. Next week we'll be coming to you after the Duquesne-Dayton game with some analysis from the wrap-up of the regular season. Later in the week we'll talk about awards, we'll preview out the tournament, and then hopefully we'll be with you every day of the A-10 tournament in Brooklyn. But for now, it's just going to be one last normal podcast here, and we want to start with the VCU Rams.
So this point in the season, 1 week to go before we head to Brooklyn, and VCU is pretty much our last hope for the A-10 to get an at-large bid. Dayton was floating around in a few brackets. Lenardi and a few others had the Flyers in his first four out, but they went and laid a tremendous egg against Rhode Island at home, so they're pretty much knocked out of all consideration at this point, and it's up to VCU. But the good news is we're thinking they look pretty good with just 2 weeks until Selection Sunday.
Yeah, and we went deep into the metrics last week. We're not going to do that again. I think it's pretty simple now. They're on an 11-game win streak. They're up to 14-2 in the conference. I've said all year the magic number is 15 wins. And I think that we've now reached a point that over the Rams' next three games, their last two here to close out the regular season at George Mason, home for St. Joe's, and then their quarterfinal game in the A-10 tournament, a 1-2 record across those three games should be good enough for the Rams. I think one more win locks them in. Two more, and we really don't need to sweat anything. We might be talking about potentially getting into an 8-9 game.
Yeah, they should be looking good at this point. They're 36th in the net, which seems solid. And on bracketmatrix.com, which collects over 100 brackets from all around the internet, a bunch of writers, it takes the average of them. And VCU's the second 9 seed on that website. And they're ahead of 14 at-large teams right now, so they're pretty safe. They really just need to avoid disaster. So they go at George Mason, which at this point is a borderline quadrant 2, quadrant 3 game. So it wouldn't be a bad loss by any means, but not great. And then they're home for St. Joe's, which would be a disaster if they lost that. But, you know, they should take care of business against the Hawks. And once they get past that point, they won't really have any other possibilities of a terrible loss once they get to Brooklyn. So as long as they don't have any major slip-ups, they should be fine at this point.
And so I think it's worth talking about the great coaching performance that we've seen from Mike Rhodes here in his second year at the helm of the Rams. We haven't talked very much about the Coach of the Year race, and honestly, a big reason for that is I just think Rhodes is running away with it. And apologies to Mark Schmidt, Keith Dambrot, and Ashley Howard, three guys who I think have all done phenomenal jobs with their programs this year. But to see VCU turn it around the way that they have, to the point that we're feeling really comfortable about them making the tournament with a week to go in the season, it just has to go to Mike Rhodes.
VCU was picked 7th going into the season. I think we both might have had them even lower than that on our own rankings. And at this point, yeah, they're the consensus best team in the A-10. As we've said, the only team with a chance at getting an at-large. They've already clinched a share of first place with a week to go in the season, and it's just very impressive considering they lost two of their key players in Justin Tillman and Jonathan Williams. And something we talked about a lot going into the season was their struggles on defense in 2018. And with Tillman especially, losing him, I did not see VCU's defense improving that much, but it's one of the best, not just in the conference, but in the entire country. And hats off to Rhodes. He's done a great job getting these guys together, and they don't really lose too many major contributors, so if all things go well, he should have a good team next year, too.
And the biggest heap of praise that I want to lay on Rhodes here is I really think that he's been the difference so far this season. I really don't believe that VCU is that much more talented than Dayton or Davidson. All three of those teams are pretty similar, but Dayton has laid eggs all throughout the season. Losing Friday at home to Rhode Island is the best example of this. Davidson has lost to UMass and St. Joe's. That's the difference. VCU lost on the road to a Davidson team that was red hot at that point, and then lost on the road to a Rhode Island team that was probably playing their best basketball of the year in late January when it happened. They don't lose bad games. This team always wakes up. They're always ready to play. And part of that is a testament to their depth. They have the best bench in the league. And if someone struggles, they have the ability to go to their 8th, 9th, and 10th guys in a way that no one else in the A-10 does. But a big part of that has to go to Mike Rhodes. This team is ready for every game, and they're just so well coached.
Yeah, that's another good point. They do probably have the deepest rotation, along with George Mason before they had some injuries. But VCU, they have a lot of guys they can go to, and it just seems that Rhodes has found the key using good lineups out there. He can keep his guys fresh. And that's just such a huge advantage that will be important when you have to play back-to-back days in the A-10 tournament coming up.
So this is the one spot in the awards ballot that I think we have a consensus agreement on. Really nothing that could happen this last week unless VCU just has two absolute dud games that would change our mind. But one other award that we've neglected thus far is Sixth Man of the Year. And it's not going to be the best year for this award, but there's a few worthy candidates.
Yeah, this was a tough one. Just the A-10, there's not a whole lot of deep rotations, so it's kind of tough to pick the best sixth men. And one note before we get into it, I do want to mention both Trey Landers and Obi Toppin have come off the bench at times for Dayton this year, and if you compare them to other bench players, their stats would stand out. I'd say we'd have to disqualify them, though. Landers has started over half his games, and now he's coming off the bench. And Obi Toppin has started about 7 or 8 games in a row at this point. It looks like he'll stay in the starting lineup for Dayton moving forward. So, good players, but I don't really think we should consider them for this award.
Yeah, barring an injury, they'll both end up starting 9 conference games. And for me, that's the line. If you've started half of your team's games in conference, then I will not be considering you for Sixth Man of the Year.
So, one guy that I want to talk about first for Davidson, Carter Collins, his numbers don't jump off the page because he doesn't take a whole lot of shots. He's not a really high-usage player, but he's averaging 5.4 points a game and almost 4 rebounds off the bench. So, nothing spectacular, but he is a 40% three-point shooter, and for a team like Davidson that they so often rely on the three ball, maybe not as much this year as other years in the past, but they do like to shoot it from deep. That's just such a key weapon for them, having someone that can come off the bench and knock down a few shots for them. So I've been impressed by him. I feel like he could start on a few other teams in the conference, but I think he has a good role with the Wildcats.
He was in my honorable mentions. Also in the honorable mention, I want to throw in Jonathan Laurent from UMass. He actually started most of the non-conference for the Minutemen, but only 3 starts in A-10 play. 7.3 points, 4.3 rebounds per game for the Minutemen in conference. Not been a great season for UMass, but Laurent's one of their key glue guys. He's had a nice season. That's about all I got to say.
Yeah, it's kind of tough for UMass because we were just looking at their roster before we started recording, and they've had several different players get starts at certain points during the season. One guy that stands out to me, Unique McLean, who his numbers have jumped up over the last few weeks, but most of his production has come as a starter once he entered the starting lineup a couple weeks ago, so I wouldn't say he's really a prototypical sixth man. Another guy for UMass, though, that's impressed me a bit is freshman Cy Chatman. Just 3.5 points and 2 rebounds, but out of their bench guys, it just seems that he's passed the eye test for me at moments. He plays some good defense for the Minutemen. And it's just tough, though, overall, because they have mixed up their rotation so much over the course of the season.
I do want to note before we go forward, while VCU has by far the deepest bench in the A-10, they don't have any guy who really stands out. I thought about talking about, like, Mikhail Sims or Corey Douglas for this, but it's just been such a team effort for VCU, and this is their issue in the Player of the Year discussion. They just don't have guys who stand out tremendously because all of their guys are so good. But with that being said, I had a very clear number 2, and that is LaSalle freshman Ed Crosswell, who's actually putting up a mammoth 8.4 rebounds a game in conference play in just 22 minutes. He's gotten a few sporadic starts. He's at 6-4 conference play. And this is a guy who is absolutely going to be starting for the Explorers next season. He's one of the key reasons why they've turned it around is he's started to get more minutes. But this guy is an absolute beast on the glass. And he has a stat line reminiscent of that of Cyril Langevin over the last 2 years, where really all he does is just put his hands up on defense and get a bunch of rebounds. He could be a big candidate for a breakout season next year when he has more responsibility and an extra summer of polish.
Yeah, Crosswell is a great candidate for this. Although he has started the last five games, so maybe at this point the rest of the season I'd expect him to keep starting. But this was my stat of the day a couple episodes ago, and it still holds true today. He's number one in the country in offensive rebound percentage. And as you said, over 8 rebounds a game in conference play. He's got 7 per game for the whole season. And that's just been huge for the Explorers, him on the offensive glass being an inside presence for them. So I would say my second place, I think we're going to both end up agreeing for number one. My second place would be Bonnie's guard, Nelson Caputo. And his numbers, like most of these guys, it doesn't wow you that much. Just over 6.5 points a game, 2.5 rebounds, and 1.5 assists. But to me, it's just so valuable for St. Bonaventure that they have a pretty reliable backup point guard. Someone that can handle the ball, and obviously Kyle Lofton gets a ton of minutes for them, so maybe it's not as important for them as other teams, but I look at the A-10, I don't see a whole lot of teams with a really solid guy off the bench that can handle the ball and run the offense. So I'd say Caputo. He's also gotten a couple starts here and there when they've had injuries. And at this point, he's never really been much more than a role player, but finally as a senior, he's getting more minutes than he has in the past, and I just feel like he's been doing a good job, and he's a part of their success this year.
Yeah, I think we both have come to the same conclusion of Sixth Man of the Year. And I am curious as to whether or not he'll win just because we don't know if the voters are going to consider Obi Toppin a bench player or not. If they do, he'll probably run away with this award. But for me, it's very easy. It's number zero on Duquesne, a man who I believe is the shortest scholarship player in all of A-10 basketball, Tavian Dunmartin. 9.6 points per game in the A-10, but it's the impact that he has for this team as their spark plug off the bench. And he has proven over the last 3 games with Sincere carry out that he is far more capable than doing what he's done in his role this year. 30 points on Saturday against UMass starting in Carey's place. This is a guy who needed a little bit of time to get his feet under him, literally, shooting threes. Anyone who listened to our podcast with Ray Goss in early January, he said he was just waiting. Dunmartin was shooting horrendously from the outside to start the year, but he looked great in practice. Something I noticed that another one of Duquesne's radio broadcasters, Jarrett Durham, also had in the back of his mind throughout this, he wasn't setting his feet when he shot catch-and-shoot threes. He's doing it now, and he's really coming along as one of Duquesne's key weapons as we head down the stretch.
Yeah, I can't really put it much better than that. You're the big Dunmartin fan here. But one thing I do want to say, at this point, Sincere Carey just underwent a minor knee surgery last week, and he's missed games here and there. He's basically been day-to-day the entire conference season, it sounds like. And who knows what his status is moving forward. Hopefully he can come back before the end of the year. But if not, Duquesne will really, really need to rely on Tavian Dunmartin if they want to make a run in Brooklyn. Against UMass, he really answered the bell, knocked down a ton of threes, got them back in the game for another one of their double-digit comebacks. And it's been an impressive season for him. You know, it's tough as a point guard, I would say, just because they have so many new players on their roster. Everybody other than Eric Williams is new to the team. But he's done a great job. And, yeah, as you said, unless they consider Obi Toppin a bench player, which I don't think they will, I'd say he's a solid candidate for A-10 Sixth Man of the Year.
All right, so moving along, this is a segment that we've kind of wanted to do throughout the year. We were waiting for the proper day to do it. And with this being one of our lighter content pods, we want to talk about our all-excitement, all-A-10 team, where we're going to go through real quick and just draft 5-man units of our favorite players to watch in the A-10. One thing I want to note, I plan on structuring my team somewhat close to that of a realistic basketball team. So I'm not about to just go out here and just pick 5 of the 10 best guys in the conference. No one on this no one in this conference has more than really 2 guys that I would consider star level players. So I'll be keeping my team to that same rule.
All right, so I'll be the gentleman here. You can start us off. Give us your first pick.
So I'm stealing the guy that I'm sure also would have been your first choice.
Yeah, no doubt.
And regardless of who you root for, the funnest guy in this conference is Obi Toppin. The dunking machine, the now all-time record holder for dunks in a season at the University of Dayton. This guy is just loads of fun. He's what we hoped Kostas Antetokounmpo would be, except he's even more. And when you really look at the minutiae of his game, that's where it gets really impressive. There's hundreds of guys in college basketball who can just get up high and dunk. But Obi has become a very impressive passer as the year has gone on. He's a lethal dive guy. He actually dribbles pretty well for a 6'9 guy who's not just some one and done at a power conference school. All around, everything he does is just fun to watch. And he's literally getting better by the day.
Yeah, all right. I just have to, since I let you draft Obi, I got to talk about him for just a minute. You know, I don't think I've been watching Dayton basketball a long time, and I've never seen a player become a fan favorite so quickly. I think it probably took about 5 minutes into the first game of the season when he had 3 dunks before the first media timeout against North Florida. And it didn't take long for Dayton fans to figure out that we had someone special on this team. And so moving forward then with my first pick, I'm going to go with another guy that has suddenly broken out to become a fan favorite at his school, and that's Osun Oshunyi for St. Bonaventure, who leads the A-10 in blocked shots. He's already a great defender, 4th in the conference in rebounds, and for a big guy, he's 6'10". He can really jump. He's just a freak athlete, probably not as strong as Obi is, but overall a very solid player. And I had to throw this fact out there because right before we started recording, I was reading St. Bonaventure's website, looking at their player pages, just trying to get some last minute information. And on their website, they mentioned that he has a 7'8" wingspan, which is 2 inches shorter than NBA prospect Mo Bamba. So who knows, if Oshunyi keeps it up, maybe he'll have his own hit song here in a couple years, but he's been a fun player to watch, only a freshman, so looking forward to see how he's going to develop over the years.
So I would have had him 4th on my team had we not done this in a draft format. I just love a guy who can block a ton of shots. I'm a sucker for impressive defenders, and Oshunyi, just not only the rim protection, but the rebounding too. He's going to be great coming up. But for my number 2 pick, this might be a cop-out, but I'm going with the likely player of the year, John Axel Goodmanson from Davidson, a favorite of the pod. Goodmanson heat checks are just something that you don't get to experience with any other player in this conference. And for those people who think that Kellen Grady's the funnest guy on the Wildcats, they're just not watching. I've seen multiple games the second half against Dayton being probably the most illustrious example of this, where John Axel is just pulling up with hands in his face like an NBA guard and just drilling threes. And it's almost Warriors-esque. He actually has a tiny bit of Klay Thompson in him. I don't want to take that comparison too far, but there's a little bit in his game, just his ability to be able to hit from anywhere. And if you love offense, John Axel Goodmanson is the right guy for you.
Yeah, that's a great pick. John Axel does it all. And if there's one guy in the A-10 that's great at just taking over a game, it's been him. He's had a few games this year, for example, Wichita State and St. Louis, where he just put the team on his back, and it's really fun to watch. All right, so my next pick, this guy, I think he flew a little under the radar going into the season because he wasn't expected to be his team's best player, but I would argue that he is now, and that's Jacob Gilliard for Richmond, their 5'9 point guard. And, you know, this might be a little bias in my answer because, you know, as a short person myself, I like seeing smaller basketball players, and Gilliard, just all-around solid player for a little guy. He's averaging over 16 points a game in the top 5 in the conference. He also leads the conference with 3.1 steals per game, which is in first place by a decent margin. And just to see someone like that, he's really quick on his feet, his quick hands, he can make the three ball. It's just, I've had fun watching him run Richmond's offense. And, you know, he's only a sophomore, so he'll be back for a couple more years. And he's just been a pleasure to watch this season.
So for my number three pick, I'm going to start to move away from the stars and into the role guys. One of my favorite role guys in the A-10 ever since last year, Isaac Van of VCU. He doesn't ever light up the stat sheet, but I just love him as a glue guy. He's a player that I really feel could walk into any of these 14 locker rooms right now and immediately have a critical 30-minute-a-game role for any of these teams. He's scoring about 11 points a game. He rebounds in the mid-single digits a game. Great defender, just a smart player. And I'm a sucker for glue guys. I really think that Isaac Van is the best in terms of versatile wings that you can rely on both ends of the floor. He just does it all.
You know, I was going to save him for last, but I'm just going to skip ahead. I'll move to my VCU player who I was going to take, and that's Dariante Jenkins, who I've been a fan of ever since he got to VCU. He's a really solid three-point shooter on a Rams team that doesn't have a whole lot of good outside shooting. But not only that, he's good at creating his own shot, and he can drive to the rim, he can dunk, just a solid all-around player. And just the fact that he is one of the few good shooters for VCU, it seems whenever he gets hot, he has no fear, he's willing to heat check out there, try to get his team back in the game, and I love the aggressiveness that he wants the ball, he wants to score, and he's been fun to watch for me.
Number four for me, I'm going to go with a potentially controversial one, Fats Russell of Rhode Island. And there's two elements of this. Because we have good Fats, the performance against Trae Young again in the Oklahoma game last March that I keep talking about, his first half against Dayton last Friday night, where that Fats Russell is the guy who we've heard about growing up in the streets of Philly who can hit from anywhere, who's just rolling up the court and nailing contested deep threes. But then there's also the Fats Russell that we saw for all of January, where he was on pace to be the worst high-volume three-point shooter in college basketball history. And so there's this great two-faced part of the Fats Russell game in which on any given night you could watch a spectacular basketball performance or just an incredible brick fest, and that'll always keep you on your toes.
You know, there's something to be said for Fats. I know it hasn't been a great season shooting the rock for him, but you know, he's another guy. He wants the ball. He's willing to shoot himself out of a slump, and he's had some good moments. I mean, his last game against Dayton was one of his highest scoring games of the season, so hopefully for him, he's turning a corner. All right, so this might not be a great pick because it just happens to be another one of the best players in the conference, but I'm going to go with Charlie Brown from St. Joe's just for the fact that when he has the ball in his hands, I don't think there's anyone more dangerous in terms of scoring the basketball. He leads the conference with 19 points a game, and just the way that he can create his own shot, I mean, I don't think anybody can really match his combination of ball handling, shooting, and driving to the basket. Just a good athlete all around, and I think he's so dangerous. It's too bad for him this season that St. Joe's hasn't really given him the help that he needs, but he's just, in terms of pure talent, I think he's one of the best in the conference. He's not going to win Player of the Year this year, most likely just because of how his team's been, but just in terms of scoring the basketball, if you want to see someone that can light it up in a hurry, Charlie Brown is a great guy.
So I'll actually let you move on to your fifth, but real quick, I want to give a quick apology to Marcus Santos Silva of VCU, whose old school post-up game is just enthralling. I just couldn't find space for him on the team, and I didn't want to have two VCU guys, but it pains me to leave him off. I'll let you do your fifth before I finish mine up.
All right, so my last guy, I'm going to go with the big fella from UMass, Rayshon Holloway. And this guy, you know, he's a senior now, so he's almost done in the A-10, but never really turned into a star. Always been a solid role player, though, but just something about watching this guy. I mean, he can outmatch just about any team in terms of his size and strength. And we saw it his last game against Duquesne where he put up a double-double. if teams don't have somebody with the size to match up with him, just watch out, because he can take advantage of that when he's playing a good game. And just seeing a guy like that, I mean, just one of the biggest basketball players you'll see in college. It's fun to watch. He's had some great moments over the years, and I'm going to miss watching him in the A-10. It's been a fun 4 years.
I've been waiting all season for this oncoming. I don't even know what to describe it as.
Should I just get out of the way right now?
Yeah, it's time for me to finally just talk about the man who became my favorite player in all of college basketball back in about mid-December. The fifth member and the captain of my all-exciting team, Tavian Dunmartin. I talked about him a little bit in the sixth man discussion. He's become an even more fun guy to watch now that the threes are falling down. It still blows my mind that he just willed Duquesne through that UMass game with 30 points. This coming just a week after he was the best player on the court in crunch time against George Mason down in Fairfax. Duquesne has had a whole run over the past decade or so of all of these smaller sixth men guards, guys like Sean Johnson or Eric Evans early on in his career. I'm weirdly blanking on a lot of these guys. I had like six of them in my head and probably should have written them down. But the one big difference between Dunmartin and the rest of those guys is all of them played about 15 minutes a game. They came in for some quick offense, and that was it. They were nowhere to be seen in crunch time. Dunmartin is 5'8", and gets put in the game for crunch time defense because he's that valuable just getting in the face of a ball handler as he's going up the court. Obviously, everyone in this conference, except for maybe Jacob Gilliard, can just shoot right over him. And yet, there have been multiple instances this year in which Keith Dambrot has put him in for just a defensive possession with the game on the line. He's just been so thrilling to watch. I'm so glad he's at Duquesne instead of Akron so that we can enjoy all of this.
All right, I'm going to keep that message in mind next year when I go on my Trey Landers glue guy tangent for Dayton next year, because hasn't been the same season for him maybe, but next year Trey's going to be back. Just wait and see. And before we move on, I don't know if you had any other honorable mentions you wanted to talk about. I just had two that we didn't hit on. Actually, I had another Duquesne guy, Eric Williams Jr., and just solid all-around player. He's got to have one of the highest verticals in the conference. He can really get up, and he's had some highlight reel dunks this year. I remember a few weeks ago, I can't remember the team it was against, but I believe he had a alley-oop over his head, just a fantastic dunk. And then one more guy, Kyle Lofton for St. Bonaventure, who's in the running for A-10 all-rookie team. And just the fact that he's a freshman that has shown the capacity to take over games by himself. He's hit some huge shots. He hit the game winner against LaSalle just a couple weeks ago. And the fact that he's a freshman, he's just fearless out there. He wants the ball in the big moments. And this one doesn't have to do as much with his playing style. I'm just so impressed that a freshman has been able to do this much as the Bonnies' starting point guard.
One other guy that I really thought about, and it became a debate between him and Fats Russell, was Carl Pierre over at UMass, who's kind of the same type of player, where on any given day you could see him torch another team or just shoot himself to the bench. It's another fun yin and yang, hot and cold, to be able to watch Pierre.
All right, so with that, we will move on. We have two Twitter questions from our listeners. And first of all, we will talk about the St. Bonaventure Bonnies. We got this from one of our favorite followers, at Bonna Commenter. And he asks, do the Bonnies have the depth to knock off VCU if they play Saturday of the A-10 tournament? So I would say this kind of depends on if they get the double bye, which would make it their second game of the A-10 tournament. Right now, they are in position in fourth place in the conference. And if it's only their second game, then yeah, I actually think they have a chance just because of how well they've been playing. And if they don't get the double bye, then that would be their third game in 3 days if they do reach VCU. I think that really hurts their odds just given VCU's depth. VCU's going to have the advantage in the tournament just because playing back-to-back days, it's draining, and VCU can compensate for that better than other teams. And I do know the Bonnies, their worst showing of the year, they lost by 30 against the Rams at the Riley Center. I don't want to look too much into that game. I mean, you know, that was a terrible game for the Bonnies, a great game for the Rams. You can't get too much information just from one game, so I don't think that is the reason why they have no chance. Obviously, the Rams would be favored, but the Bonnies, they're hot right now. VCU's probably the only team that's hotter in the A-10 at the moment. But the Bonnies, they got a chance. I mean, you know, in Brooklyn, anything can happen.
Yeah, VCU would obviously be favored in this game, but I think it would be a great matchup. There's so many things that went wrong for Bonaventure last time that just simply won't happen again. Oshunahi and Stockard were both in tremendous foul trouble the whole night. Kyle Lofton was 3 for 15 shooting. Stockard was 3 for 10 shooting. They went a combined 1 of 18 from the three-point line as a team. There was just so many red flags in that game that just kept piling on top of each other. And I think the Bonnies are really a lot better of a team now than they were even 3 weeks ago. I would say no, I think VCU would probably win that game, but the Bonnies absolutely have a shot. If I was picking the line, I'd set it somewhere VCU favored between 4 and 5 points, something around there. Maybe a nice -4.5 on a neutral court.
Yeah, that seems fair. I'd probably go a little more, maybe 5 or 6, but they'll have a chance. And, you know, as I said, it will help if the Bonnies get the double bye. And while we're on that subject, I did a little digging before we started recording, and it turns out getting the double bye as we get this late into the season where there's a few contenders for that, the last two spots, really, because at this point, VCU and Davidson are locked in, and it's really five teams playing for the last two spots. It is absolutely huge to get the double bye in the A-10 tournament. If we go back to 2007, there's only been one team to win the A-10 tournament by winning four games. And that was 2015 VCU, who got the 5 seed that year. And their first game was against Fordham, so I don't even know if that really counts. That probably didn't use up much of their energy. But other than that, there's only been three teams other than VCU since then to even make the championship outside the top four. That's 2011 Dayton, 2009 Duquesne, and 2008 St. Joe's. And all three of those teams lost. I just think that shows how when you have, I believe, 11 out of 12 champions coming from the top four of the conference, getting that last spot is going to be huge. And even though, you know, we've talked about there's three teams that are pretty clearly ahead of the rest, and that's VCU, Davidson, and Dayton, whoever gets that fourth seed, though, they have a much better chance of making noise than teams 5 through 7, which is why these last couple games in the regular season, it's just so critical. And that'll be huge. If the Bonnies right now, they are in position, they have the advantage, they just need to take advantage of that. And if they do, then who knows? It's unlikely, but it wouldn't be terribly shocking to see them make a run here.
So coming off of that, I'll actually give my own stat of the day real quick. Mine also being A-10 tournament related. Over the weekend, Duquesne's win clinched them a top 7 seed no matter what. And I know things have been dark for the Dukes program this century, but it was even worse than I thought. This will be just their third time getting a top 7 seed in the A-10 tournament in the 21st century. They got a 7 in 2009 and actually made a run to the finals, and then got a 4 in 2011 on a team that absolutely cratered in late February, and then lost in the quarterfinals to a 12th-seeded St. Joe's team. This is just one of plenty of stats that I've seen in the last few weeks that proves that this is absolutely one of the three best Duquesne teams of this century, with really a pretty easy chance to get to number 2 if they can just not make fools of themselves in Brooklyn. The 09 team that made the final and then almost beat Virginia Tech in the first round of the NIT, still above them, but these guys have a chance to be number 1, and with so many young players, it might not be number 1 for long if it is.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, when I was just doing a little homework for Coach of the Year, I did notice this is Duquesne's first winning season in conference since 2011, which just shows that this really has been a special season for the Dukes.
Yeah.
And before we move on, I think we should answer the second part. We have part two of Bonna Commenter's question. And he asked if we would retract our statements about potential fraudulent activities going on in the Bonnies basketball program. Do you have any comments about that, Tyler?
No, because there's 353 Division I men's basketball programs, and I honestly believe that all 353, or maybe 352 minus Fordham, have paid a player at some point in the last decade. I think you can go through with every team, and there's that one recruit or two that you really don't understand why they got them there in the first place. There was probably some money going around. We all know college sports is super corrupt, and we can only hope that if this is going on in the A-10, it's a small enough scale that none of the teams ever get caught.
No, I don't think the FBI will look at any of this, and, you know, it is what it is. Teams bend the rules. If Fordham's actually cheating, then they should be ashamed of themselves, because they're just not doing a good job of taking advantage of that. But, yeah, some teams cheat more than others. I'm sure everybody's bent the rules at one point, so... Yeah, not taking that too seriously, though. I mean, I don't think anybody in the A-10... Nobody's pulling in McDonald's All-Americans, so... Until that happens, there's not too much of a reason to get suspicious about any of this.
Yeah, the only A-10 team that should have any fear, and once again, we want to note, we have no proof of this going on, but... The fact that Will Wade is, like, a centerpiece of this FBI investigation in year two at LSU, I wouldn't feel 100% comfortable if I was a Rams fan that nothing happened there.
Yeah, you know, he was there such a short time, so I feel like VCU's probably safe, and honestly, VCU fans, based on the tweets I've seen, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there enjoying this, hearing Will Wade's name get dragged through the mud, and... We'll see, he might be in some trouble at the end of the season, and I'm sure some of you will enjoy that, so... That's gonna be interesting, him and Sean Milger. See what happens. Alright, so we have one more Twitter question. This comes from longtime listener Trent, and he asks us, who's gonna get to 20 wins in the A-10 before all postseason? So NCAA, NIT, maybe CBI for some of these teams, who knows? But who's gonna get to 20 wins after Brooklyn?
Yeah, so obviously VCU already there. As are the Davidson Wildcats. 23 wins for VCU, 21 for Davidson. Other potential candidates, Dayton and Duquesne, both sitting at 19. SLU is at 18. Outside shots for Mason at 16, Bonaventure at 15, and I guess mathematically Rhodey could still get there at 14. I obviously expect the first four to get there. Dayton and Duquesne aren't both just going to go winless from here on out. It should be pretty easy for them to collect win number 20. Bonaventure is where the math starts to get a little difficult, because if they win their last two, that means they get a double bye, and so they would have to go all the way. But you know what? I think it's possible with the way the Bonnies are starting to play. George Mason... They probably need to win their last two in the regular season. I don't see them winning three games in the tournament. I would say no for the Patriots. Rhodey's not getting there. I'm pretty certain about Dayton and Duquesne that they're safe. And Bonnies, I'd put it about a 15% chance.
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit it. Dayton at 19 wins. They have a home game coming up against LaSalle, and then they travel to Duquesne. Unless everything goes wrong, they really should win at least one of those games. Duquesne's a little more interesting of a case. They're also at 19 wins, but they have a tougher schedule because they go at SLU, and then they're home for Dayton. And, you know, they will be underdogs in both of those games, albeit they will be slim underdogs, and both games are close to toss-ups. So I would expect them probably to win one of those, and if not, they're still going to have a chance to win a game in Brooklyn. So I'd say the Dukes have a good chance at this point to get to 20. SLU's interesting. They're at 18, and then they host Duquesne, and they go at St. Bonaventure. I don't think they're going to win both of those, so... You know, they should win one of those between Duquesne and St. Bonaventure, and then they'd need to win at least one game in the A-10 tournament. And then, yeah, as you said, St. Bonaventure and George Mason, at this point in the season, they'd pretty much need to make a run to the A-10 finals to have any chance. And something else I wanted to mention, this wasn't part of Trent's question, but I was inspired. We have two teams that haven't quite gotten to double-digit wins, and that is LaSalle sitting at 9-19 and GW at 8-21. Do you think these teams, is everybody in the A-10 even going to get to 10 wins this year?
Well, the Colonials are going to give us a scare there. I'm pretty confident that LaSalle can go at least 1-2 here in the remainder of the season, including Brooklyn. I don't think GW can get two more wins unless they... you know what, actually, I take that back, because they're going to have to play on Wednesday. And so if they can beat UMass, then they got a shot.
Yeah, it'll come down to Fordham, honestly, because each of these teams have a game against the third-best Rams in the conference. LaSalle, they go at Dayton, that's going to be a tough one, but then they're home for Fordham for their senior night, Pookie Powell senior night. I would expect the Explorers to show up for that game, and if they do lose them both, they will have a chance against a, not a great team in the A-10, but they'll play a middle-of-the-pack team in the first round in Brooklyn. GW, it's a little more questionable because they go on the road to Fordham, which... That's hard to believe that somebody's going to be an underdog against Fordham, but they will. And then they're home for George Mason, who... The Patriots are susceptible to bad losses, but I don't see them falling that far losing to GW. So, yeah, like you did say, they do play on Wednesday. They're locked into that in Brooklyn, so... They're going to have a game against one of the bottom feeders. Maybe if they just have a good night, they have a chance to get to 10. It's not looking great, but... It's possible. So hopefully everybody in the A-10 avoids winning less than 10 games this year. Because that's not exactly a high standard to reach.
So before we wrap it up, I wanted to hit a quick where he at. For mine today, the former son, well, I guess not former son, as far as we know, he's still his child. But the son of the former head coach of the Rhode Island Rams, Jimmy Barron, played at Rhodey until 2010. He's still around. He is playing in the LNB Pro A League right now. That is over in France with the Champagne Chalons Rems. I have no idea if that's right, but we're going to roll with it because I stopped taking French class years ago.
All right, so if you're going to do an old school where he at, then I got to throw this one out here. I saw this name on Twitter a couple days ago, and it brought back a few memories just because when I was a kid, I remember I was just fascinated by this guy's name. Lemire Goldwire of the Charlotte 49ers, who currently he is playing in Argentina for Regatas Corrientes. No, I don't really have much else information about him. He's bounced around in his career playing in a bunch of different countries, but... I just saw that name floating around on Twitter, and that's one of the great ones. That's up there with Pookie Powell and Scoochie Smith in the history of great basketball names.
Yeah, and one last thing I want to point out with Jimmy Barron, he's playing about 30 minutes a game right now, so good for him as he moves into his early 30s in age, still kicking it around.
It turns out he doesn't need to be the coach's son to get minutes, so turns out he's actually a legit player.
Yeah, well... With that, we want to hit some quick errors. I was trying to go off the top of my head for too much with Duquesne for this pod. And with that, I forgot some of the many heat check bench guys of the Jim Ferry era. So for any Duquesne fan that doesn't want to relive this time, close your ears real quick. But Trayvon White, Desmond Ridenour, and early career Rene Castro were the guys I had in my head at the time. All of which have paled in comparison to... Sean Johnson in terms of scoring guards off the bench in this century for the Dukes, but Dunmartin has taken that throne from Johnson of the two great heat check guards of this era. And then one other thing with Dunmartin, I meant to research this before the pod, he is indeed the shortest scholarship player in the A-10. In fact, the only guy on anyone's roster who is smaller is Dayton 5'7 walk-on Cameron Greer, one of the best guys that we see down here at the UD Rec. Dunmartin just slightly above him at 5'8", right below Jacob Gilliard at 5'9". So, once again, it just reinforces the shortest scholarship player in the league plays defense on the final possessions at his coach's choice.
And shout out to Cameron Greer, shooting 100% from three-point range on the season. He banked in a three against Rhode Island, so still perfect on the year.
And so with that, we want to thank you for listening to the final regular season episode of the 3-Bid League Pod. We will be coming back to you guys next Sunday to wrap up the regular season, start getting everybody ready for Brooklyn, and hopefully with a special guest joining us. So if you have any questions that you want answered, just reach out to us on Twitter at the number 3BidLeaguePod. Please tell a friend, and if you see us in Brooklyn, come say hi.